Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me, crowd.
You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by Nashville, Tennessee-based chef Robbie Wilson. Robbie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for allowing me the time to be with you today.
You are an incredibly busy man. You're the culinary director of four of Nashville's hottest restaurants. Maybe if you could kind of give us the rundown of where these restaurants are, what they're called, and what you're serving there.
Well, the restaurants kind of, we'll start at the bottom, working our way up to the top. We're positioned in a part of Nashville called the Gulch, and the Gulch is a transitional neighborhood between Midtown, which was original kind of the commercial area, which transitions into West End where people live, and then the other side would be downtown. The Gulch at one time was, it's this hilly section that is a dilapidated warehouse area that has now been a LEED certified neighborhood. It's the only one I know, I think at this time, even in the United States. So everything is green, and from the commercial part of it, which would be obviously our restaurants, to even, I live in the Gulch. So I live in the Gulch and I work in the Gulch. And in the Gulch, we have three of our restaurants. A Whiskey Kitchen is a cool, it's exactly what it is. It's a whiskey kitchen. It is big, obnoxious, local. And when I say local, we're close to Kentucky, so obviously we dabble with plenty of bourbon, and the menu is built around that, and for people to imbibe in the local spirits. And you know, we do everything from, you know, wood-fired pizzas to, you know, fried green tomatoes, to keep it simple. And it's turned into a place that I was unaware. I moved to Nashville a year and a half ago, that people of Nashville like to drink alcohol.
Yeah, it's a South, man. You know it.
So this is the perfect place for them. It's really cool, too, because it's a thing that I love about Nashville. And you know, the Gulch is this transition area. And if you look at the crowd and you did a cross-section, it is, there will be a suit drinking a pitcher of something muddled next to a musician, which the biggest surprise to me when we moved there is I always thought of Nashville as Johnny Cash. I thought of Nashville as Dolly Parton. And I never really, I mean, Johnny Cash is cool. I never listened to country music. I mean, I made fun of Garth Brooks a lot, and I made fun of kind of those crossover artists. But come to find out that on a given day in our restaurants, I mean, you know, Jack White lives in Nashville. You know, Robert Plant lives in Nashville. The Black Keys live in Nashville. And it's a really cool thing. And that's a lot like our restaurants, a lot like our neighborhoods. It's a little melting pot. And what it's allowed us to do in this neighborhood too, at the same time, is take these warehouses. We kind of honor the crunchy part of it and keep the facade of what it is. But on the inside, we turned one into Virago, which is a Japanese restaurant and sushi bar. And then we just recently opened Cane Prime, which is a steakhouse. And I really try to get away from labels. Like, you know, people call it a boutique steakhouse and people call it a modern steakhouse. You know, it's just a consciously thought out steakhouse. I mean, I consciously sourced my steaks. I mean, I have a direct relationship with the ranches that we purvey our meat from, which is primarily Wagyu beef, domestic Wagyu beef. All my steaks, for the most part, with the exception of one, is domestic Wagyu beef. And, you know, what I try to do also with the steakhouse is think of it as there's anything wrong with the Ruth's Chris and the Morton's, but we wanted to be a steakhouse that, you know, that really thought about sides and kind of paid a little bit, honored the old traditional steakhouse menu items, and then just blew them out of nowhere with, you know, risotto tater tots. We have a carrot farmer that's about 10 minutes from downtown, and we do these obnoxiously sized wood-fired tandoori. We make a fresh tandoori and roast the carrots, and they come out to the dining room, a huge pile of purple and yellow and burgundy carrots just with the fragrant tandoori. So it's not a traditional steakhouse at all, you know. So
you're making me hungry.
Well, that is what we do for a living.
Touche. So let's talk a little bit about, tell me, because, you know, I haven't been to Nashville in a very long time, since I was a little girl.
It's changed.
It has changed. I always think of the Grand Ole Opry. And
it's still there.
It's still there.
The Ryman Auditorium, which I was fortunate enough for the first time to go see. It's an amazing place and has amazing energy, but I don't know what, people were very small when they built that place. It's funny because, you know, everything you would think of in the South, it's essentially a church pews.
Yeah.
And very, very, very tight. The acoustics are amazing there, though. It's a really cool place to see an act.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, tell me a little bit about so you're sourcing a lot of local ingredients, it sounds like.
Whenever possible. And for us in Nashville, I mean, if you think about Tennessee, it's not a girthy state. It's long and skinny. So local to us could be across the border in Kentucky, which is less than an hour's drive, to Alabama, to Georgia. I know, depending on where you are in the country, people are very picky about what means social, what is local. But for us, local is really is the greater Nashville area, but it stretches straight into Kentucky as well.
Is there any specific ingredient that Tennessee does well? Say carrots or just another thing that grows there and is you absolutely love and highlight on your menus?
Legal or illegal?
Good question.
One thing that I think is the next big, what's for me that I'm excited about that we use at Tavern, a gastropub that we have, is goat. I think goat's going to be, I mean, you know, look, Nashville is an emerging young city, and we are not a city that's going to be reinventing the culinary wheel, but I've just started putting goat on one of my menus, and we have a lot of great local goat meat, and I had to kind of be evangelical about it, but it's had a really great response, and we use it in a taco at this time with this one restaurant, and the local goats are amazing, and we actually have a few cheesemakers that are doing a fantastic job, but we are getting better every day. The fortunate thing for us in Tennessee is what it costs to do business there, in a sense of purchasing and acquiring land. And I think the best is yet to come, because for us, for our company, I mean, our big thing right now is I'm acquiring land. We're going to have our own farm for our restaurant at this time, you know, I love to support the local guys. But what I've also found too is, there's a thing as a chef that you want to support them, but it doesn't mean it's better, and it doesn't mean that it's great. And I have a guy who pulls his truck up to one of our restaurants, and he wants to sell me sugar snap peas, and they're 10 minutes away, but they're not great. And it's like, what do? I feed them to the staff and buy them because I want to support this guy, or do I get those sugar snap peas that maybe came from California? But Tennessee is doing, we have a lot of great like heritage. I mean, it's the South. People like proteins a lot. The pork scene is incredible. We use a guy that has crossbred Berkshire porks and red wattles, and they're now called Tennessee Blue Butts, and they're fantastic animals, and I use them on three of my menus. So the local product, I think, in the area that's great are things that are furry. Things with fur.
That sounds great. I'd like to back up for a moment and talk a little bit about what LEED certified means, because it's a very interesting thing that not a lot of people actually know about.
They don't, and I will be the first to admit that I'm not an expert on it either, but it is a qualification program where you have to have a certain amount of green materials and green energy to be LEED certified. And right now, I know there's some in Atlanta's developing a neighborhood as well, but right now I know we're the only one, which means everybody in that area to be in the Gulch has to cooperate. Whoever doesn't, I mean, there's not a buzzkill where if you can't do it, you're going to ruin it for everybody. They just won't approve construction, or they won't approve you to be a part of the neighborhood. So I think it's a really, great thing. We see a lot less SUVs in the area, and we see a lot more people, you know, riding bikes and walking their dogs. And for me and for other 30-somethings, I think it's fun to feel like, you know, you can see downtown, but you know, and you see planes flying overhead, but you know you're like in a green area. And I think it rubs off to us in the restaurants as well. Other restaurants have come in the area, and they have to abide by the same thing. So,
and it's, I believe, the first, you know, LEED certified neighborhood in the South.
Oh, it's the South.
In the South, in the entire South, which is really
correct.
Cool.
Yeah, you're correct. You're actually south of the Mason-Dixon. Sometimes you get caught up in the South and you feel like it's not the only place in the United States anymore.
Well, you know, it's in people's ideas of the South, too. It's, you know, everyone's got, some people think Texas is part of the South. And,
we're from Texas, and it's just another country.
Yeah,
for better or for worse. For better or for worse.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about some of the items on any of your, well, okay, let me back up. I love whiskey. And, you know, I'd love to know, especially since you're close to Kentucky, what are some of the whiskeys on your menu, bourbon, that you're super stoked about?
We have a really great relationship with the Van Winkles. And so, like, the Pappy Van Winkles, and we are fortunate enough to get our hands on kind of proprietary product that's not available. I mean, for outside of that little area, and for the most part, that's not anything that we advertise. We have people. We don't want the guy who just sold his business to come in and clean out our restaurant of this stuff. But the people who know to ask for it, and it maybe two times a year we'll have that on. So I'm a big fan of that, and you know. On a personal level, what I drink, I like the Hudson products a lot. I mean, we have a lot of success with those as well, and we try to incorporate those in our food as well, and we cook with those. And I mean, I even braise a pork belly dish in whiskey as well. So the brown liquor is a big thing in Tennessee, and people come to visit. I think they come to expect to drink that as well. So we try to, you know, keep as many options. Right now at Whiskey Kitchen, I believe we have 63 different ones available.
Whoa, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's amazing. So how, you know, talk a little bit about your process, because you're the culinary director for 4 restaurants.
I don't know what that means, really.
How, you know, you're planning menus and, you
yeah,
know.
I'm the chef of the chefs who hires the chefs and trains the chefs and works with the chefs and works with the cooks, and I'm in the kitchen. So, it's kind of the architect of an idea and a concept, and we, you know, we go to change menus. It means with the change of each season, and this one, spring was tough because it started early for us. I'm sure it did for you guys up there. It started early. I have to kind of bring everything together at one time. I have great people I work with, there's a part of the business that I think that the culinary director is required to do, and that is sell the product in a sense, deal with the public. But at the same time, I'm making the menus, I'm leading the direction of the company, and you know, and I can't do it without the chefs. But it's mainly the creative side of it, you know, developing relationships with farmers and developing and really trying to create a culture, because what our company is about is really about a culture, and it's coming to Nashville, which I will say this, when I first got there, it was a little behind the rest of the world, what was going on culinarily, and kind of just allowing, whether it's front of the house or back of the house, to just really feel like a part of, there's something great and really a new movement in Nashville, because we're not the only ones doing it. There's some great cooking going on right now.
Would you say the local food movement, is that an active thing in Nashville? Are there green markets and great produce for folks to find out there?
There are, and I think there's and specifically a history of I mean, if you think about the South and you think about okra and you think about mustard greens, those things are readily available, and they always have been. For a chef that's always wanting to use something new, it's hard to get red shiso leaf locally. That takes time, and that's when it comes from for us, like, to start our own farms and to start our own gardens. But everybody's really into it, and it's a healthy city. People are, I mean, I've never seen so many people running in my life. Every time I'm out on the road, and I always tell my wife, I'm like, it's hard to tell if they're running from something or if they're actually out jogging. But it's a town, I think, that's really very, the new town, the people like us who moved there are really conscious about local product, about organic product, and about eating clean, you know, and really eating on a level with the rest of the country. The thing that drove me crazy when I first moved there is for people to say, God, this is great for Nashville. And I'm like, well, it just needs to be great. It doesn't need to be great for Nashville. I mean, we're trying to raise the bar, and it takes a little bit of time, and we have to be evangelical about what we do there. But Nashville wants it. We have a great music scene. We have young people that are hungry, and the town supports everybody what they do. And I don't want to sell Nashville too much, because I don't want it to happen to what happened to Austin we were talking about. But at the same time, I want, you know, I would like everybody to know how you need to come see it. If you haven't been there in the last 5 years, you wouldn't recognize it anymore.
It's like a total makeover.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. It's not, it's interesting to me because as much time as we've been there, which isn't that much, it doesn't really feel like what you'd think of the South. I mean, I think it's probably because so many people have just decided to make it home, but it doesn't have the stereotypes that I was a little fearful of, to be quite frank. And, It's a cool young city that accepts you for what you are, and if you want to make macaroons, you know, out of chilies, I mean, you're going to have a little following. People are going to tweet about you. It's a really interesting place.
You just blew my mind a little bit, but we're going to take a really quick break, and when we get back, we've got more from Robbie Wilson of Nashville, Tennessee. You're listening to Stay tuned.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information. And be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
If you're just tuning in, you are still listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Nashville-based chef Robbie Wilson. He's killing it at four different restaurants: Whiskey Kitchen, Kane Prime, Tavern, and Virago.
Virago, correct.
Virago.
Correct.
I wanted to say Virago, but I think it's because I've been watching casino movies lately and the Bellagio.
Well, and we also get a lot of times people be like, we ate at your steakhouse, Kanye Prime.
I almost pronounced it Kanye. Kanye West. Oh, man. Well.
And it's funny, too, in the South, everybody, things become plural. It's usually Virago's.
Virago's. I went to Virago's, y'all.
Virago's. Yeah. I'm fixing
to do this, or
I'm fixing to go eat at Virago's.
Yep, totally. Or I mean, I guess you would say, well, I always say fixing to go to the grocery store, or make groceries, which is a New Orleans way of making groceries in New Orleans means you're going to get your groceries.
Okay, but if I use that, I'll give you credit.
Note to self for a later use. So let's talk about a Nashville phenomenon, Something I've never actually tried, but I'm really curious to know, and I wonder if you've tried it and can kind of talk a little bit about it, which is hot chicken.
Never heard of it. Kidding. Hot chicken is a is this... It's their take on, you know, the South's famous for fried chicken, and what the real roots of hot chicken is, where some of us may soak our chicken in buttermilk, flour, and fry it. They soak it in hot sauce, and then they fry it. It's not for the faint of heart. A lot of people will be like, no, you got to try it. I ain't going. You know, it's one of those deals. And you go into a place like Prince's is a perfect example, or Pepper Fire, that these... Prince's is the old, and it's the one that kind of really put it out there, I think, for the rest of the world. But you get your fried chicken, and you know, you get it in a basket. There's like Texas toast and a pickle. There are no sides. There are no, we're gonna have a salad, or it's hot chicken. And it's one of those things that I think that it's very addictive. The first time you're not gonna like it as much. The second time you're gonna go with someone because they made you, and you're like, wow, it got better. Because the funny thing is what they'll do too is that's the hot chicken. Now, you walk into the places and they'll say, do you want it hot? Do you want it medium? Or do you want it extra hot? And you're starting with chicken that's already been just soaking in. So they make it, you can even have it even hotter. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's really cool too, because there's been some offshoots, and some people are trying to rethink hot chicken. That's not anything you can reheat. It's a Nashville institution. Besides the, you know, Nashville was a Meat and Three town as well, and Meat and Three is big.
What is Meat and Three?
Meat and Three will consist of cafeteria style, a protein that has had the bejesus cooked out of it till it's falling apart, and it will not hold its form. You know, I mean, its brisket would literally fall through the twines of the fork, and a bunch of the threes are the vegetables. Your traditional vegetables, like, you know, mustard greens, okra, black-eyed peas. And it's funny because Nashville summers aren't for the faint of heart, but the people rally through that and go in and eat. It is so filling. And it's, of course, with the sweet tea that, being a new person in Nashville, and I grew up drinking tea in Texas, it's like dessert tea. You know, it has like the viscosity, and it's like motor oil, and it's thick, and because there's so much syrup. That's the thing in Nashville too, is the Meat and Three and the sweet tea. I will say that I'm not a big sweet tea guy.
It is. Well, I mean, have you had Alabama sweet tea before?
I don't. Yeah, it's...
Ooh, that stuff is like, you could put it in a car. It's so sweet that it's like fuel.
Viscous, and because there's so much sugar, it completely changes the whole texture of... Like, tea should... I always thought it's like, it's not much different than water. This stuff is fork and knife tea.
It is definitely like Aunt Jemima syrup.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's crazy. So, you know, the hot chicken thing is, I think anybody who visits Nashville, you have to try it, and you might want to bring your own little thing of yogurt. Because the bread's not going to help that much.
And like a Mylanta or a Pepto-Bismol.
And a Mylanta. You might, yeah, put the Mylanta in the yogurt. Maybe they should do Mylanta flavored yogurt.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds disgusting, but helpful.
Right.
So, barbecue. Barbecue is another thing. I mean, especially this is, you know, going to be interesting to talk about since we're both from Texas. But, you know, what is Nashville barbecue versus other parts of the South? Because you go down the line and, you know, you go to a place like Mississippi or Alabama, and you're going to get that like really sweet barbecue sauce. You go further up towards a place like North Carolina, and you've got the vinegary stuff. But what kind of barbecue do you have in Nashville?
Nashville really searches for its own identity with barbecue, because I think Memphis, you know, riding on parlaying the success of Memphis and ribs, you'll go to a barbecue place in Nashville and they'll have that. At the same time, Kentucky's big on like mutton and lamb, and they'll have a version of that. And then they also have like the mustard, the vinegary barbecue. They haven't figured out where their place in the barbecue world is. So they're like, all right, well, let's just do what everybody else, let's do all of it and put it under one roof. So, you know, it's funny because and you're right, we're from Texas. So for me, for us, it's a rite of passage, and it's something that it's really, when you get right down to it, it's the thing that one of the things I crave and I miss about South Texas. Here you kind of have to find out, well, if I go to this place, they're better on ribs than they are whole hog, or they're better on the mutton part. So Nashville really is kind of the UN of barbecue, because it's all flavors, all styles. They haven't really developed their own at this point. And it's, I don't know. Maybe that's something we should look into later. Nashville needs to decide, make up its mind what it is right now. And I think with the young cooks and the young trained chefs that we're moving into the town, you're starting to see more nose to tail. And I think it'll soon follow.
So a lot of people have moved into Nashville recently. And what do you think, why is that going on? It's interesting.
What does it cost you a month to live in this area?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no state income tax. And it's another thing, too, that I think you can... You don't have to reinvent yourself in Nashville. But for me, when I looked at the opportunity that I had with all these restaurants, it was a quality of life that it wasn't going to be as cutthroat as it may be on the East Coast or the... Because in what we do, it's a very stressful, competitive, and I love it. But at the same time... your mortality rate in the industry can be not what it should be. And Nashville is easy. It's easy to get in and out of. The people are they're so sweet. And you hear the thing about Southern hospitality, and it's absolutely true, because you in Nashville ask somebody for directions. They'll say, well, they draw you a map. No, they don't. They invite you in. They draw you a map. They make you a glass of tea, and they say, and they hand you the remote to their TV, and it's true, and it's really true, and it's sincere there. And for a lot of people, I think it's refreshing. I think if I came in with a navy blue mohawk and tattoos on my legs that like I wore Argyle socks, your next door neighbor is going to want to know everything about you, and they're going to welcome you, and I think that's interesting to people. And the music scene, I think, has a lot to do with it as well, because Nashville is, at the end of the day, a recording town. So the cool thing about that is because people are recording, it's not just, there's no really, I mean, you've got the Bridgestone Arena where a professional hockey team plays, and then you have the Ryman. Now, there's really not a live music scene there, but everybody comes to record there. And so for the more rock and roll, it's not country music. And for the artists, they can afford rent. And artists, whether they're musicians or they're painters or all the above, it just becomes down to thing. You know what? It slows down a little out there, and I can eat well, and I'm not going to pay a state income tax, and it's a quality of life. And there's something romantic about the South, and for some people that may be annoying, but once you get there and you realize I'm in the South, but nobody really slows down the way they speak. They enunciate. It's not what I was expecting, and it's refreshing. We just have so many people, like our neighbors are transplants from Los Angeles and New York, and was like, I just like the pace of Nashville. Nashville has an amazing pace.
So if I walked into Virago, Cane Prime Tavern, or Whiskey Kitchen right now, what are some of the dishes you're super excited about?
Virago right now, well, we cook with the seasons, and so soft shell crabs are in the height of the season. At Virago, what I try to do is we're very serious about what we do. We're very serious about technique, but if you read our menu and you comment, I don't want you to think we take ourselves too seriously. I mean, I try to put whimsy on the menu, and the soft shell crab's a perfect example of, we tempura fry them. That being said, usually when you do tempura, there's a special flour. It's a buckwheat flour. But we take wasabi peas. Everybody loves wasabi peas. I mean, I pulverize those in a Vitamix. I make a flour out of those. And then I also put chunks of wasabi peas. We make a tempura batter out of wasabi peas. And then we make a buttered popcorn-flavored kaya, which is kind of a jam. And that is something that you could eat some nigiri sushi, or you could have some maki rolls, or you could have sashimi. But when you talk about hot food or what you might come and eat, that's cool to me. I mean, the fact that I do a Wagyu brisket that we sous vide and we braise in a circulator for, it's a 72-hour cooking process. It holds its shape. It eats like a steak, but the minute it hits your mouth, it completely falls apart. We have an amazing robotayaki program where we grill items over the imported charcoal from Japan. I didn't live in Japan. I spent some time over there. I'm not Japanese. We try to, honor cooking, maybe cooking styles and techniques, but we are who we are. And obviously you wouldn't eat buttered popcorn flavored sauce in Japan, but that's what Virago's like. And you know, Cane Prime's not that much different. I mean, if you walked in there, I think your intentions would be, okay, it's a steakhouse and I'm going to have a steak. But you look at the menu, and when you, in the middle of the menu, you look and you say, well, wow, here at the top of the menu, it says early spring 2012. What steakhouse like changes their menu like six times a year? We cook with the seasons. Every steak reads like a wine list, and it's Wagyu beef, domestic Wagyu beef. It'll say, you know, the ranch in Montana where it came from, and we sous vide our steaks there. And there's a reason behind that. And for me, when I eat a piece of meat, and I usually err to the side of rare beef, but the thing that annoys me is I love a char on a steak. What I don't like is if I want a rare piece of beef, in order for the traditional cooking method of it, is I'm going to go char, gray, pink, big section of red, and it works its way down. By sous-viding the steaks, I go char, boom, medium rare, until it hits the bottom, medium rare. And, you know, it's not reinventing the wheel, but that, much like using Wagyu beef, is something that we do differently there. And we have a whole market side of the menu that changes. You know, we get fish flown in whole from the West Coast and from our East Coast source in South Carolina, and we're consistently changing those. And our sides, to me, are the most successful thing, because for a steakhouse, I think it's important that you feel like you could go in there and eat with someone, share a piece of meat, and then just kill it on creative sides. Because for me, that's the way I like to eat. You know, I really like to dabble with the vegetables, and it kind of it's fun for us. We do really cool things. We have like a cream corn brulee. We make a really amazing fresh cream corn that's got roasted jalapeno, but we put the crust on it like a brulee, and you crack right into it. You get chunks of jalapeno, and it's cool. So that's what you would have. You know, that's what you kind of have to think at Cane Prime. We have raw fish. We do crudos, and we have some raw meat preparations. And with Tavern is kind of our midtown gastropub. It's cool because, you know, backing up, we were talking about alcohols. There's a big moonshine thing going on in Tennessee right now, and it's really pretty cool. So at Tavern, we do a raw oyster and moonshine menu that we kind of pair moonshines with raw oysters. So we got that going for us.
Wow.
And Tavern, much like myself, I'm sure you're well aware by talking to me that I suffer from ADHD. And if you read the menu at Tavern, it's just like that. It's food that's supposed to be matched with beverage, and when I say beverage, I mean adult beverages. So we have oysters and moonshine, and we have, you know, some cool tacos with goat and cool things like that. And it's ever changing, and Whiskey Kitchen as well. You know, whiskey, but you know, whiskey's really kind of the one restaurant we created that was really for all people. Business lunches, but it's unpretentious. Nothing's over $15. I mean, but we have, you know, raw tuna dishes. We do some really cool things out of a wood-fired brick oven, whether it's pizzas that just probably have too much pork product on them, but we are in the South, and
you can't go wrong with
that's
that.
The skinny there.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap things up, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
And how can people find out more about the restaurants? What's the website?
Well, they can go to mstreetnashville.com, and hopefully if you're ever close, you should definitely check us out.
I think there's fares on JetBlue and Southwest right now. I might have to go book one.
So. Money back guarantee.
Well, thanks again to Robbie Wilson. Thanks to everyone at Heritage Radio, Joe Galarraga, Jack Inslee, and everybody at Roberta's. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Changes my mind.